This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. It's been nearly 40 years since the world's worst industrial disaster claimed the lives of thousands of people and continues to impact more than 500,000. Justice is elusive for the survivors of the Bhopal disaster in India, who are living with the impacts of an unprecedented chemical leak from a plant run by Union Carbide Corporation in 1984. Dow Chemical, which owns Union Carbide, has refused to properly compensate victims or conduct a thorough cleanup. Litigation is ongoing in both India and the United States. Amnesty International, which has been documenting the disaster for years, has just released a new report called Bhopal, 40 Years of Injustice. And my guest is Mark Dummett, Head of Business and Human Rights at Amnesty. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
So it's quite interesting that there's very little awareness here in the United States as a whole of what happened in Bhopal, even though currently it's an American company that is on the is on the hot seat, if you will, and it was, as I mentioned, the world's worst industrial disaster. But perhaps because it happened 40 years ago, a memory seems to have faded. And yet, this is an issue that is, in Bhopal especially, absolutely not a thing of the past. Right? How are people still living with the impacts of this disaster 40 years, nearly 40 years later?
Well, that's right. It isn't a historical case. It's not a historical disaster. It's a disaster which began in 1984, on the 2nd of December 1984, but it's continuing today. And that's why Amnesty International continues to beat the drum, as it were, on behalf of the survivors of this terrible disaster, to promote their voices and to share their stories of suffering and resilience in the face of this, you know, absolutely appalling tragedy. As you said, thousands of people died within days. 500,000 people have suffered from life-defining injuries as a result of this chemical leak. And the vast majority are incredibly poor already. So as well as the physical suffering that they've had to endure, the injuries have also pushed them further into poverty. And the various efforts by the Indian government, by the American companies involved, Union Carbide, which was American, and Dow Chemicals, which then bought out Union Carbide, the various efforts to provide compensation, to provide healthcare, have been incredibly, utterly inadequate. It is a terrible story of injustice, of a failure to hold this company to account, of a failure to look after the survivors of this disaster. It is a story of two countries, India and America. And one of the things the campaigners have always said is, would this have happened in the US? If an American company had caused such a terrible toxic leak, what would have happened? Would they have responded differently? And I think the answer is absolutely yes. They would have responded differently if the disaster had happened at home in the US.
So there's so many different angles on the injustices that continue. 40 years, as we said, is a long time. There have been several generations of people born since then. How has the contamination that continues in that area impacted either genetically through genetics passed down from parent to child, or from existing environmental contamination from 1984? How has that impacted younger generations of people in Bhopal?
Right, it's a really good question and an important issue, this. And I mean, to me, it is the most shocking aspect of this whole sad story. And it's a reason why we've included in our report actually quite a lot of photos, photographs taken of the survivors and their children, because what we're seeing now in Bhopal is a third generation of people being born, of children being born, obviously, with congenital disorders. So the impact of this appalling toxic chemical has been passed down now to a third generation and is causing injury to newborns and has caused injury to young children. That's one side. You also talk about the pollution, which is still there. And that's because the factory site was never properly cleaned up after the disaster. And the contaminants on the site, and this is a plant, a chemicals plant, which was built in this city in central India, the contaminants continue to leach into the groundwater. The groundwater, which provides drinking water to tens of thousands of people. And they're continuing to be poisoned by this water. And according to researchers working on behalf of some of the community health groups, which have been organized by the survivors and their supporters globally, including many in the US, who have donated to some of these healthcare initiatives. According to this research, this water has continued to spread. This poisoned water has continued to spread. So today, 40 years after the disaster, or almost 40 years after the disaster, even more people are being impacted in this absolutely dreadful way.
So when we think about what is needed, immediately comes to mind, well, why haven't survivors sued Dow Chemical? Why haven't they tried to hold this company accountable legally? How much is complicated by the fact that we're talking about Indian survivors and a U.S. legal system that's, you know, on the other side of the planet? And we're talking, as you said earlier, about poor people and a rich corporation. What is the status of the litigation?
The litigation, incredibly, has gone on all this time. It is due to a large part down to the strength, the commitment to the bravery of survivor groups that the litigation has continued. They are incredibly strong campaigners fighting on behalf of a much wider group of people, and it's thanks to them that this issue is really still alive. That you know, they're the ones who are motivating groups like Amnesty to speak out about it. And I think, to answer the first bit of your question in terms of what's the solution has got to involve them. They've got to be at the center. The survivor groups have got to be at the center of any solution. Dow Chemicals has got to talk to them. The U.S. government, the Indian government, they all need to come together and to come up with a solution to this multifaceted problem involving all these health issues that I was describing, the socioeconomic problems as well, the contaminated waste which still hasn't been cleaned up. This all needs to be fixed. Now, yes, there have been a number of court battles in the U.S. A U.S. judge dismissed the claims brought by survivors in the US, stating that India was the correct jurisdiction for these claims to be heard. In India, the Indian government did reach an out-of-court settlement with Union Carbide over compensation, but the amount they agreed to was woefully inadequate. It was a fraction of the amount that the Indian government had previously assessed was needed to properly compensate the survivors of this disaster.
Was this the $500 that someone commented was more than enough for an Indian?
Right, exactly. It was an utterly, as I said, inadequate amount. The survivors pushed for many years to get the Indian Supreme Court to overrule that settlement, but the Supreme Court ruled against them last year. And then there's a separate thread, which was a criminal case, which was brought by the Indian authorities against company managers or factory managers, including Warren Anderson, who was the head of Union Carbide, he was arrested when he was in India just days after the accident. But then after the US government put pressure on the Indians, he was released. The criminal case saw a group of Indian company managers actually go to jail for a period of time for their negligent actions, which contributed to the disaster. But the American accused have never been extradited from the US. So one of the calls that the campaigners have always asked for, and Amnesty as well, is calling on the US government to make sure that those accused do face justice in the US, are extradited. Although of course it's many years ago, and several have passed away in the intervening period.
What about grassroots efforts to support the survivors? You mentioned that there have been some efforts around healthcare, and even some that are funded by individual donors here in the United States, progressive-minded individuals, justice-minded people. What are some of the ways in which you're seeing grassroots efforts to help the victims, and also ways in which those here in the United States are showing solidarity?
It's so important, this international solidarity for the survivors. Anyone listening to this can just go into Google and search for the Bhopal Medical Appeal. Or the International Campaign for Justice for Bhopal, and see for themselves on those websites what the survivors and their international supporters are doing to bring essential healthcare to tens of thousands of people, to continue to fight for accountability and justice. It's quite extraordinary the extent to which, you know, 40 years on, they, as I've said before, they're continuing to push for justice. And one of the reasons why we wanted to put this report out now was to draw attention to, you know, to some of their successes as well, that they've had, some of their small victories that they've had in terms of being able to provide extra support to the survivors. The other thing I would say in terms of what people can do to support them is to put pressure on Dow Chemicals. And last week we made a call directly to the companies, most of which, or the largest of which, are US firms, those investing in Dow, to use their influence on the company to force it to go to the table to come up with an adequate compensation package for the survivors. Dow's response is outrageous. Dow's response is that it is not responsible because at the time of the disaster, that the factory was operated by Union Carbide, and it only bought Union Carbide 16 years after the disaster. But of course, it has bought the company. It has also bought everything that the company does and had done. It ultimately remains responsible for providing remedy for the victims of this disaster.
And I imagine that Dow tries to use plausible deniability in avoiding accountability, saying that that it's not responsible because Union Carbide was responsible. But if you buy a company, you buy everything that goes with it.
Right, exactly. And I mean, you go onto Dow's website, or you check out Dow's Twitter feed. It presents itself as a very sustainable, a very ethical organization, a company that cares about diversity and inclusion. But at the same time, it is refusing calls from the survivors to provide adequate compensation for this disaster. And I think if there's anything that we can do as activists, it is to try and put pressure on Dow in whatever way we can to use some of its absolutely enormous wealth to provide this meaningful remedy that the people deserve.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. Is there a website? Can you give out Amnesty's website where people can get a hold of the report themselves?
Amnesty.org. Very simple.
And we'll post a link to that from our site as well. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Mark Dummett, Head of Business and Human Rights at Amnesty International. This December, it'll be 40 years since the Bhopal chemical disaster, the world's worst industrial accident. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.